Dave. Welcome to Don't Screw It Up, a guide to pregnancy and parenthood by people figuring it out as they go.
Each episode, we'll grapple with the fact that someone is going to be depending on us to keep them alive and explore exactly what that means.
This episode is called, Are You Going to Eat That?
We're going to be talking about pregnancy cravings and the do's and don'ts of satiating your appetite. We also have our first show guest today. Yay! Nicole Strack, who is one of my really good friends from a really long time ago, and she is also pregnant. Woo!
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Nicole.
Welcome, Nicole. So, pregnancy is this wonderful time where suddenly you can't control your desire to want to eat everything. And so we wanted to just devote an entire episode, like pretty early on, to really just talking about food. It's a very important part of the whole pregnancy process. And so, you know, like I've invited Nicole in today. She's actually in her third trimester right now and has a lot to say about this, has a lot of funny experiences. And so we thought that we would help to enlighten you all today. So, you know, we all have this image of like this pregnant lady becoming this ravenous, horrible monster who just constantly wants to eat everything. And we're here to tell you that most of that is true.
Yes.
Except for the myth of eating for two. That's kind of BS.
And that is kind of interesting. Like, I've been reading a lot of the blogs about what to eat and stuff, and it seems like people are really pushing the idea of just healthy eating in portions. I think a lot of people were overeating, and you really only need to eat about 300 to 500 more calories than you used to. And I think there is a serious risk if you are overeating. It's actually pretty bad for the baby.
Well, yeah, and it's going to be a giant baby that has to eventually come out of you. So let's try not to have a ginormous baby because that would really hurt in delivery. And, you know, it's also just not an excuse to go around eating every horrible junk food possible. But if you do, it's not the worst thing in the world. Nicole is cursing right now.
What? Nobody's judging though, right? Right, guys?
So we wanted to start off by just kind of talking about some of our, you know, first trimester like food craving stories. I've been, you know, pretty hormonal since the whole pregnancy thing started.
Not as bad as I kind of expected. I, like, the media made me believe you would just become an insane person.
Oh, yeah. I thought I was going to be way bitchier than I ended up being. I mean, there are moments. Trust me, there are moments.
You're relatively pleasant.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. You're so very nice. But there was one day I was coming home from work. I was so tired and I was starving because I was just hungry all of the time at this point in time. And I came home kind of late from work and was really just playing up this whole like story in my mind of Dave, you know, having this home cooked meal that was all ready for me. And I would just walk in the door and be like, honey, wow, you cooked dinner for me. And then I walked through the door and there was no dinner. And I was so sad that I had played up this whole image in my head.
Now, keep in mind, this is never a thing that happens. We usually make dinner together.
And I didn't text him. I didn't call him to ask, like, will you please make food for me? I'm starving. There was no... Anyways, so
you
I ended
just
up...
broke down.
I just bawled. I was so sad. I started crying and I was bawling and I was like, Dave, I know that it's not your fault and I'm not blaming you, but I just really want dinner right now. And I was logical in my tears and explained to him what was happening.
I feel your pain. I super feel your pain. Yes.
And, you know, he hugged me and told me it was all okay, and it got better.
We eventually had dinner.
We did. I eventually got fed. So There was that, and like I think the first time that I ever really felt that intense like hunger pang is probably the best way to describe it. It's like, you know, you've gone on like this really long treacherous hike and you just haven't had anything to eat and you're just starving, and like, and that intensity of food pain, like that's exactly what I felt, but like all of the time, and it would happen almost immediately. So I felt that like a couple of weeks or so after I found out I was pregnant. I don't know if part of it was just mental and placebo effect, but I was about to go to bed and pretty much just shot up out of bed and was like, Dave, I'm starving. I need to eat right this second. I cannot go to bed unless I eat. You need to do something about
and
this.
And it was like midnight. We had just gotten home from the airport. I was ready to crash. And you're like, nope. Need to eat now. Go get me almonds. I don't want anything particular. I just want to not be hungry anymore. Go get almonds.
And that's all I did. I just like tried to pop as much food in my mouth, chew it as fast as I could, and go to sleep. Like
you
that.
Did. You just sad ate.
Yeah.
I want to get you Soylent. I think that would solve your problems. Yeah. It's
oh my gosh,
literally
yeah.
engineered to just be food.
Eric
to
and
solve.
I had... I'm sorry.
Now, have you done Soylent?
No, but my husband Eric and I had some very extensive discussions about Soylent when I became pregnant because I got so sick of chewing because I had to eat so often. Like a very real conversation that we were having.
So for anybody who doesn't know what Soylent is, we'll put a link up. But it's essentially just like this pancake batter tasting like milkshake out of a bottle that pretty much just supplements your entire like meal's worth
each
of nutrients.
Bottle has a third of a day's worth of stuff you need,
so theoretically yeah. you could have like three of these things and be totally, you know, healthy and stuff, right?
Soylent, it's for making people.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, gross. And giving you diarrhea, I'm sure.
Ew.
All right. So,
all right.
Nicole.
Yes.
Apart from wanting to eat Soylent,
yes.
what do you have some early hunger pang stories for us?
Yes. I think mine are probably similar to Eileen's in the sense that I had never experienced hunger that strong before. And contextually, for those of you who are listening, before getting pregnant, I would often forget to eat, and I would maybe go 6 or 8 hours without eating. I would have some water when I felt hungry, and then I would forget again. And then sometimes my husband would come home, and he'd be like, what did you eat today? And I'd be like, oh, I had cereal 9 hours ago. So those days immediately vanished almost as soon as I found out that I was pregnant. I also got extremely hungry and ravenous all the days, and it was a new mental adjustment that I had to make to this lifestyle of actually paying attention to what I was putting into my body and actually feeding myself, because it was now to the point where I couldn't drink water and then not feel hungry. I would drink water, still feel extremely hungry, and then I would just, you know, be peeing more, but I still needed to eat more. So.
And you can't sleep if you're that hungry
no.
either.
Oh my gosh, no. So I would sleep right before I would eat right before we went to sleep. I would keep snacks by my bedside. And often in the middle of the night, I would wake up and like eat a banana, but I felt bad going back to sleep, putting my retainers in without brushing my teeth. So there was like this whole middle of the night routine that I would be having secretly. Eric would be sleeping the whole time. And then in the morning, as soon as I'd get up, I would be eating again. It was nuts.
And I mean, similarly, like for me, I always had to keep snacks around with me within hand's reach. At all times. Like, if I didn't, I would get panicked because I was like, I'm hungry. I need food right now. Where's my food?
Yes.
Where are my snacks?
Oh my gosh, me too. I've never had such a dependence or like awareness of food in my life. Like, sure, I like to keep candy in my purse all the time. I mean, come on. But like, real meals, that was not my thing. And so it was fascinating to have this new habit that I needed to form. Based on pain and also wanting to, you know, create a healthy human, all that stuff.
Sure. That's
all that stuff.
Side goals there.
Yeah.
Really, feed the beast.
Right, exactly. That was the first priority.
So have you guys had any like specific cravings? There's always the pickles and ice cream kind of thing. Is that a real thing?
Ice cream.
Okay. See, that's not a new thing. You can't pass off stuff that you obsessively want before you have a baby as a pregnancy craving.
Why not? though.
I mean, you can. You can use this as an excuse, but that doesn't mean it's a pregnancy change.
Yeah. Okay. Ice cream is just good all the time. It's not just a pregnancy thing. For real. I mean, I haven't had any real specific cravings. It's just been I'm hungry and whatever is around me, I will pretty much eat. And I've been, you know, I've said this many times, I've been lucky enough that I haven't been nauseous.
Oh, yeah.
So there aren't things that I'm like actively avoiding, but like my sense of smell is a little bit more heightened. So there are some smelly things that I'm kind of like, ooh, I don't think I want those. how about you?
Yes. So I had the pleasure of feeling extremely sick from weeks 8 through 16. And I probably only puked about 6 or 7 times in that period. But I felt nauseated almost constantly. And so I actually moved toward, I was at that time craving healthier foods, like fruits and veggies were feeling really good for me to eat. And anything remotely greasy or sugary would set me off. Also, there was a time, though, that Eric made, Kahlua pork. He made Kahlua pork when we were just at home, and he had to put liquid smoke flavor into it, and he had to let it sit for like 16 hours in a slow cooker, and I basically wanted to die because it was the worst smell I had ever smelled, as far as I was concerned. Dude. And I was like on the verge of tears for how bad it smelled to me, but also like knowing that he was so excited about making it, I was very conflicted. In the end, he did manage to marinate it all 16 hours and nobody died. So
and
that was
and
good.
you didn't try a little bit
I
of
had
it?
The teeniest bite of it, and I was like, nah. I'm not eating this.
Well, you were a good wife for at least trying. That was very nice of you.
You're welcome, Eric.
But, I mean, through all of this, you know, we expect our partners, our subsequent, our other halves.
Our baby daddies.
Our baby daddies. to help us out in getting all of these culinary endeavors.
Oh my God, yes.
I get to eat too. It's not like you're eating alone here.
Oh yeah, there are definitely moments that I'm like, we need to get Korean food right now. And Dave's like, yeah, okay,
yeah,
sure.
Great.
Well, I guess we're eating Korean food now. That's cool. Whatever.
Yeah.
So what are you craving that you can't actually have? Because, you know, there are certain things that you're pretty much like not. You're immediately on lockdown now, right? Like, there's all these things that now your OB is telling you, no, you cannot have this. All the books are saying, no, you can't have this. Like, what do you want, though?
So if you would have asked me this in my first trimester or even halfway through my second trimester, I'd be like, oh, I really want a sandwich with deli meats, but I'm not supposed to eat deli meats because Listeria, like, undercooked eggs or, like, runny eggs I was missing. I was missing beef cooked medium, like a nice steak at medium. Mm. Now, though, I've had all of these things because I decided, oh, fuck it. It's all right in moderation every so often. So I think the main thing that I'm craving that I maybe, it's not that I can't have, but that I shouldn't be having is sugar. But like all, not just sugar, like I eat sugar with a spoon, but just like things that are made with lots of sugar, things on the sweeter side of things. That's what I've mostly been leaning towards in the last few weeks, / also my whole life. So maybe not a pregnancy related craving, but it's coming out more now.
Yeah. And it's a lot harder to avoid at this point in time because you're like, what?
I'm like, oh, but I'm pregnant.
But the baby wants it.
Oh my gosh, yes,
baby
for real.
Baby wants a donut.
Definitely.
Is that how it works?
Oh, you guys don't know because you don't have the baby in you. But yeah, for sure, the baby tells me it's like, I want boba.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I can't explain it to you.
It's like a telepathic thing.
It
like,
is. It's a, yeah, it's a mommy baby connection.
Send me fried chicken.
It really is. It's a special bond we have. Aww. And I am just strengthening the bond through boba all the days.
Yeah. What about you, Eileen? What are you avoiding?
Not much of anything either. Well, okay, except for...
So you switched on filters or...
Smoking all the time, chain smoking. Oh, it's worse. No, I haven't been drinking alcohol. I've been cutting down on my, like, coffee intake. I've been not eating rare meats as much as I can. I guess there are certain things that like, I've been craving, like, a burger. Mm. Like, just a really good, juicy, meaty burger that is not well done, because well done is disgusting.
Seriously.
And I can't have that.
So we were going to buy cheeses the other day. And we've been avoiding unpasteurized cheese, or you have, so I have by proximity. And we realized that possibly the first person we might have told that we were pregnant was the cheese person, the cheese guy at the cheese shop.
Oh, yeah, we did come to that realization. Yeah, it was like, really bizarre.
Because we were buying cheese, like, really, really early on after we found out, and you're like, I need unpasteurized cheese. Guess why?
But hopefully she actually said she needed pasteurized cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What did you say?
I said unpasteurized. Oh, yeah. No,
I need pasteurized cheese.
Whatever.
Dave, are you trying to kill me? What are you trying to do to this baby?
Pasteurize it? What does that do to a baby? What is pasteurization? Do we actually know what pasteurization is?
I think maybe put a pin in this for another episode. It's called pasteurizing the baby.
Okay.
Mm, yeah, yeah, that's an interesting topic. We should explore this a little bit more. Yeah, so definitely, like, raw things are things that they mostly tell you to avoid, and that's because of your compromised immune system when you're pregnant, right? Like, you're more susceptible to things, you'll probably get sicker more easily, so if there's, like, some sort of crazy bacteria in it, like, you can get sick. It's very likely. And, you know, certain vices, because you don't want a baby that's defective. Like, you want it to be normal as
Nobody
much as possible.
Nobody wants a stupid baby.
Nobody wants a stupid baby. And like, the things that your body can normally process on its own, like, all of that has to pass through the baby itself. So there is some sort of risk of additional harm. And, you know, there are chemicals that can be harmful to your baby as well that you probably just want to avoid, just because you shouldn't poison your baby. Yeah. And that should be obvious, guys.
For real.
I think the alcohol thing is really interesting. I mean, there's a huge stigma around drinking alcohol while pregnant in the U.S. And I think because, obviously, drinking a lot can be very harmful. There are very clear studies that show, you know, excessive drinking while you're pregnant causes low birth rate, higher rates of, like, you know, troubles with mental faculties, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. But with fetal alcohol syndrome.
Fetal alcohol syndrome, yeah.
It's a big thing. Yeah.
But what's super fascinating is, in a lot of other countries, there isn't that stigma. In a lot of European countries, women drink, obviously, very moderately during their pregnancy, and there's no higher rate of fetal alcohol syndrome. There's no, you know, anomalous birth weight there. There's actually some pretty solid studies that show that, you know, if you have a glass of wine here and there while pregnant, there's no real effect on that.
Europeans have the same IQs that we do over here, guys.
Well, and I think a lot of people are worried that if a lot of alcohol is really bad for a baby, a little bit of alcohol is going to be kind of bad for a baby. So nobody wants to even do something that's a little bit bad. But I guess I didn't really think about the mechanics behind it. And it's really because your body is processing the alcohol as you take it in. And if you take in more alcohol than you can actually process,
it will go to the baby.
Then it goes to the baby. But as long as you're drinking,
and you don't want a drink or a drunk baby. No. I mean, like, toddlers already look like drunk babies. Yeah. But
babies are pretty much small drunk humans.
Yeah. So let's hold that off. Yeah, hold that off as long as you can. But yeah, as long as you're, you know, have a glass of wine here and there, your body can process that, and no alcohol goes into the baby.
Plus, you want them to know what good quality wine is from the start, right?
Like, yeah, you got to get their palate adjusted.
Yeah, you want a baby with good taste.
Yeah. No Boone's Farm here. We're not frat boys, all right? Don't drink like a frat boy.
Not that all pregnant women have to drink, but, like, I think it's an interesting stigma that, I don't know, to understand the mechanics behind it and where the stigma comes from, and that you don't have to feel that terrible if you have a sip here and there.
Yeah. Exactly. And if you want to read about any of these studies, it's in that Expecting Better book by Emily Oster that I always cite, because it's awesome. And she's done a lot of research and has looked into a lot of various studies to come to the conclusion that you can pretty much have at least you can have like a glass of alcohol a day and it's probably going to be okay. There's no evidence that it's harmful.
a lot of other drugs are pretty cut and dry. Like smoking is very terrible, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, harder drugs than alcohol, certainly not. Even marijuana has pretty negative effects that should be cut out completely.
Yeah, I had to stop doing crack when I found out I was pregnant. I was a little bit bummed.
Sad.
Yeah, I guess there's something to Nancy Reagan's whole her whole campaign, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Good job, Nancy Reagan.
You're right about this one thing.
That's a weird sentence to say.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Okay.
All right.
Moving on. So talking about like other cultural norms and how it differs from the U.S., Europeans drink alcohol. A lot of Asian countries, especially Japan, eat raw fish or eat raw sushi. And like, how harmful is that? So just kind of reading a little bit about it, mostly because I love sushi and it really, really pained me to think that I couldn't eat it. And so like was reading Emily Oster's book and came to the conclusion that it actually is okay to eat raw fish as long as you don't get food poisoning, which I know seems obvious, right? But you are no more likely to get food poisoning in pregnancy from sushi than you are at any other time from that same bacteria.
So should I be eating sushi?
So you can eat sushi as much as you want. It's just, you know, don't eat bad sushi. Like,
that great seems advice. Like,
yeah, that's good general advice.
Yeah, just good general advice.
Don't get food poisoning.
Anyway, so Japanese people also have pretty high IQ, so we should judge this solely based off of people's IQs at this point.
Fantastic. What about mercury? I think that's the other concern with fish.
Oh yeah, don't eat mercury.
Like
don't eat fish that have a lot of mercury.
Like I've got this thermometer. Do you want to taste it?
Don't break thermometers and start swallowing the liquid that comes out of it. So shark, I think mackerel, I think like kingfish,
swordfish.
How
swordfish.
Often are you eating sharks?
I've had shark once. I didn't know until after I ate it. I felt really bad. I'm sorry, the ocean.
The ocean.
The ocean's still mad at you.
I know. And I actually don't eat tuna very often because there's a relatively high mercury content. But tuna is okay, I think, like once a week or something like that.
Actually, I remember seeing something a little bit startling regarding, I don't remember if it was tuna or maybe crab or something, but it was like some inordinate amount of ounces a week that a pregnant lady could be eating that had to do, it was FDA approved or whatever, but it was like, I want to say 12 ounces a week, which sounds absurd, but it was just some
That's
really
almost a
high
pound
number.
Of food.
Yeah. And I was like,
it was more like a challenge.
It sounded more like it.
See how much crab you can eat in 1 week.
Yeah, I was surprised at it because when I got pregnant, I was looking at the various fish that were considered okay and then to really not okay, like swordfish and shark. But there were some areas in there which were surprisingly, I don't know, you could eat a surprisingly high weight of them or volume of them and apparently not get too much mercury poisoning. I don't know if it's that you don't get any mercury in your body, but maybe it's just like doesn't cross the threshold of unsafe amounts.
Yeah. So are you stockpiling the mercury like on the non-baby part of you? Like it doesn't cross right? over that baby threshold?
Exactly.
I don't totally get that.
I don't understand it.
I mean, it seems like the general takeaways here, you guys should eat fewer sharks and just like use common sense. Eat things in moderation. Eat healthy food. You should probably be eating healthy food anyway. And it's a good opportunity to kind of like get in the mindset of you're going to have to feed a kid anyway. It would be good to feed them. Or, you know, donuts. Whatever. Boba is really good.
Dave, I like what you're saying in theory. It's just that in execution, I'm finding it very difficult to make healthy choices sometimes.
And why is that? What is the sugar craving? What are the sugar cravings like? And why should you avoid it?
Well, okay. Not sure if the listeners know, but there's something called gestational diabetes, which is when a pregnant lady can get diabetes while pregnant. And it's a different threshold than like normal diabetes, I think, that there's a higher likelihood of getting it while pregnant. And that's not good for the baby or for the mom.
And so I was very concerned that I might have it because of the amount of sugar I then started eating in the middle of my second trimester. But at my 24-week appointment, I discovered that I did not have it, which is when I had to do the gestational diabetes test. But then I subsequently might have given it to myself while celebrating not having it because I ate all the cookies and donuts and like to celebrate. Oh, I got a milkshake the next day. It was just, it was a little bit excessive. And then they don't do the test again. So I'm sitting here, I don't know, like 3-4 weeks later, and I'm like, ooh, about that gestational diabetes that they don't test for again. Maybe I should cut back on the boba. We'll see. We'll see.
I think it's pronounced diabetes.
Oh, my bad.
Diabetes.
Well, so we are lucky enough that we live in an area where you can get like so many different types of boba. There's so many different types of boba shops. So the temptation is always there. But a lot of them will do like, I don't know, 25% sugar or something like that. So
I've cut down to 50%.
Oh, sugar. Good work.
It's a process. So yeah, in general, eat well. Celebrate appropriately.
Yes, you should eat nutritious foods. That includes foods that are high in protein, omega-3s. Salmon is one of them, so you can eat it raw if you would like, as long as it's good from a good place, a good source where you're not going to get food poisoning.
Right.
And it sounds like you should eat cat food.
What? No, why?
It's high in omega-3s. It has salmon in it.
Oh, my God.
Does it have fiber and folic acid?
Probably.
And it smells pretty terrible. That's the part I don't think I could get over. So folic acid, fiber, all of these other things. You should eat good. So, you know, in conclusion, eat to your heart's desire. Be smart about it. Eat several times a day. Always snack in between. Keep those snacks, like, at arm's length. Drink lots of water. Have lots of vitamins. Also, we are by no means experts, so why the hell are you listening to us?
So, I think now we get to the point where I get to eat something.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have gotten to eat a lot of things. So, what we do every episode is I eat something the size of our baby right now. We're looking at, like, week 13, 14, somewhere
we're
around.
We're week 14.
Week 14. So, it's about 2.91 inches. So that is pretty close to a whole string cheese. So I'm going to cut about 2.9 inches of string cheese here, and I'm going to eat that.
I think our pregnancy app said that it's about the size of a troll, like minus the hair. So I'm really just imagining my fetus looking like a troll.
Okay.
Like a little jeweled belly and everything. It'd be so cute.
So I've got like 2/3 of a string cheese, and I'm still going to eat it by pulling the strings off, because I'm not a monster.
That is the only way to eat it.
Yes. Nicole is pointing at Eric right now, her husband, because apparently he doesn't eat it correctly.
Because he is a monster, he bites string cheese, guys. He doesn't string it.
So while I'm finishing my string cheese, Eileen, do you want to do your pick?
My pick of the week. Woo! So I bought this cookbook, actually. I was just looking around Amazon, and there's one called Natural Pregnancy Cookbook by Dr. Sonali Ruder, who is a blogger. She has this really popular blog called The Foodie Physician, and it's been a total lifesaver. Her book just has a lot of information about like the nutrients that you should have while you're pregnant and your baby needs. And it's healthy for it. So it's got a lot of really good, yummy recipes that are actually like really quick and easy to make. So that's all been really fun to sort of just experiment with. And also another thing, and I'm totally cheating because it's more than one pick, but the Ovia app that I was telling you about in a previous episode also includes a quick reference guide to what is safe to eat. So it'll give you warnings if there are certain things that you should be avoiding or not.
Fantastic. Nicole, do you have a pick for us?
I do. I read a book with my husband called The Attachment Pregnancy by Laurel Wilson. And we finished reading it probably halfway into the second trimester. So I want to readdress the third try stuff that she covered. But it was a very interesting book, which I thought was easy to digest and had a lot of cool, mindful things around pregnancy and deepening what she called the mother-baby bond of, like, being a mother growing a baby. Hey, It was very aptly named. And so I really enjoyed the information that she shared. And also, admittedly, I like to go into the spiritual woo-woo side of things. And there was definitely some of that in the book. But, like, it didn't feel over the top or like they were trying to beat me over the head with it. And so I really appreciated the information that she shared in there.
Awesome.
And what's your pick, Dave?
So my pick is actually a blog written by my friend Had. She was actually my old roommate. And some of her stuff is actually a little sad. She's got a kid right now, but she's also lost a couple pregnancies. And she's been super brave and has been writing about it and really well written. And it's really important that people kind of get that stuff out there and talk about it. So not always the most easy thing to read, but super important, super well written. And her blog is called City to the South, or City to South.
Thanks, Had, for writing that all down. I think that there's just not a lot of that information available online. So it made me cry when I read it.
So that about wraps up our episode. Nicole, thanks for being on here with us.
Thanks for having me.
Talking about food. All right. And we'll see you guys next time.
We're signing off. Bye.